All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here on cases 2015-386, 483, and 795. Crutchfield Corporation et al., Newig Incorporated et al., Mason Companies et al. Versus Joseph W. Testa, Tax Commissioner. For the appellant, Mr. Eisenstein.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. May it please the court. My name is Martin Eisenstein, and I represent the appellants and retailers Newegg Inc., Crutchfield Corporation, and Mason Shoe Companies Inc. The question before you is the common question for all three companies, is whether the commissioner's assessments of the commercial activity tax based solely on interstate sales to Ohio residents, even though none of the retailers had any kind of activity performed on their behalf or by them in the state of Ohio, satisfies the substantial nexus test under the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Counsel, I wonder if you could start with the nexus piece.
Sure.
I think your friends at the state would disagree with you that there aren't any contacts here in the state. I guess contacts is the wrong word, but there's software storage. There are individuals, third parties, acting on behalf of the companies for advertising purposes. Can you address that piece of the argument, please?
I would be happy to, Your Honor. First, none of the companies had any marketing activities that occurred within the state of Ohio. None of the companies had. They had zero activity. All of the companies did business on the internet and by the other means and instrumentalities of interstate commerce, by mail and telephone. All of their commerce was directed to a national, indeed international, audience.
So, wait a second, are you saying they didn't mail to Ohio residents, or they did?
They did, and all the mailings to Ohio residents, whether snail mail or email, were done from outside the state of Ohio, and they were national mailings
that were received in the state of Ohio.
That is absolutely correct.
To addresses physically in the state of Ohio.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And it is our contention that for purposes of the Commerce Clause, and not the Due Process Clause, but for purposes of the Commerce Clause, there must be substantial nexus, and substantial nexus in the context of a tax on the privilege of doing business requires in-state activities conducted by or on behalf of the retailer. And that requirement stems from the Commerce Clause underlying interests to prevent excessive burdens on interstate commerce. And when the, as was stated in the 2015 decision in Wynn, the basis for that argument was that the Constitution, one of the chief goals of the Constitution was to provide for a national market and prevent the balkanization of the market that had plagued the colonies and later the states in connection with the Articles of Confederation.
Now, would the same be true of the sales tax? It wouldn't, would it?
The same would be true of the sales tax, Your Honor, yes, in the sense that there is a standard through the Quill case that says that a company needs to have a physical presence in the state, whether through its own employees or property in the state. And the standard is similar.
So no sales tax could be collected from your clients for sales into Ohio?
That's correct. Our client, the sales would be due from the taxpayer, which is the customer, but the collection obligation on the part of my clients would be applicable only if they had a physical presence in the state. So there are six U.S. Supreme Court cases that have set forth the standard for the attacks on the privilege of doing business. And each of those cases, five out of six of those cases involved a privilege tax on doing business. It's called the business and occupation tax in the state of Washington. And in those cases, culminating in the Tyler Pipe case that we cited in our briefs and that was issued in 1987, the court made absolutely clear that there must be some in-state activity. In the words of the Tyler Pipe court, the crucial factor governing nexus is whether the activities performed in the state, whether the activities performed in the state on behalf of the taxpayer are associated with and in connection with the establishment and maintenance of the market. And the Tyler Pipe case was interpreting the substantial nexus prong of what is known as the complete auto test to determine the satisfaction under the Commerce Clause of the standards. And complete auto was decided in 1977. It's cited with approval by every U.S. Supreme Court case, and indeed this court in the Illinois.
What's the most recent? Have they addressed the e-commerce as it exists today and as it's evolving? I mean, the retail world is changing rapidly.
It absolutely is, Your Honor.
And have they addressed the Commerce Clause in respect to the e-commerce issue as it exists today? Because as it exists today is different than it was even two or three years ago. What's the most recent thing that they've done?
There are three decisions of the court. The court case that set forth the leading standard or the standard of nexus in the sales and use tax area was the Quill case decided in 1992.
Well, that's ancient in terms of the world as it exists today, though.
But the Quill case was confronted with the same arguments that are being made now, that the world has changed, et cetera. And indeed, the dissenting opinion in Quill said, wait a minute, the world has really changed. You can order items by fax, you can order items by computer link up. Even in those days, in the Neanderthal days of the mail order industry, that was still a way of doing business. And the South Dakota Supreme Court focused on those issues, focused on that, the protections that the South Dakota afforded and the services that it provided to companies doing business. And what the court said in that case is, you know, times are changing, and you're right, as a matter of due process, we will lower the standard. So the minimum context, the standard that Justice French referred to, are present in this case because you made sales in the state and you had the advantage, and it's fair to make sure that you collect the sales and use tax under the Due Process Clause. But under the Commerce Clause, which is animated by different interests than is the Due Process Clause, what the court was very clear about is that we have to look at the structural effect of that. And what the court was concerned about was that there were 6,000 jurisdictions which can impose differing sales tax rates and exemptions and multiple filings and audits and the whole panoply of administrative remedies.
Either outcome, you win or you lose, this case is probably going up because they haven't addressed these e-commerce issues. The present court, who's left on the present court that was there in 92? Hardly anybody.
I'm not sure how many judges are present. Unfortunately, Justice Scalia was present, but
right.
And wrote a very interesting.
But he's not.
He's not present now. I think Justice Thomas was on the court then.
Right.
And I think Justice Kennedy was on the court then. I do want to point out the other two cases so that you have that as a background. So in 2015, the U.S. Supreme Court decided the Wynn case, and that's a really important case for this case as well. And in that case, the court blessed the dual standard under the Due Process Clause and the Commerce Clause, and specifically cited with approval Quill and the Quill standard that there are two different standards, and the Commerce Clause is animated more by the different burdens on interstate commerce than is the Due Process Clause. And in that case, Justice Alito, writing for the majority, said very clearly that the goal of the Commerce Clause was to prevent the burdens on interstate commerce and to prevent the balkanization of the country.
And so basically, your position is your client doesn't do business in Ohio.
Our position is that our clients do not engage in business activities in Ohio. That's correct, Your Honor.
And therefore, they shouldn't be taxed on the privilege of doing business because they don't do business in Ohio.
That's correct, with the addendum that it's based upon a law.
If they did do business in Ohio, do you have a quarrel with the way they measure this tax on the privilege of doing business?
No, we do not.
Right.
And what I should point out, though, is that when the Quill case was decided, I know that e-commerce has changed, but so too has the number of jurisdictions have changed. So when the Quill court cited to the multiple burdens for taxpayers, there were 6,000 jurisdictions that imposed tax obligations. We have learned from the amicus in this case, one of the amici in this case, that there are 19,000 municipalities and 2,600 counties that could impose a sales and
Council, use tax. May I ask you a question? I'm over here. I'm at your right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Council, the National Governors Association seems to be taking issue with your position. And I'd like to know what you say. They're categorizing your argument to you cannot face even minimum doing business tax assessments because you lack a physical presence. Is that your position? Absent a physical presence in 2016, there is no tax liability?
No, that's not exactly our position. So the National Governors Association position was that Quill doesn't apply to this case. We haven't argued that Quill per se applies to this case. We have argued that there are six U.S. Supreme Court cases culminating in the Tyler Pipe case that set forth a very similar standard to the Quill standard, but not the exact same standard.
I understand. I guess I'm looking for your response to the argument, though, of lack of a physical presence, maybe in answer to Justice Pfeiffer on the, we're in an e-commerce age and a lot of people don't have a physical presence in Ohio, but they're sending a lot of packages into Ohio.
Yes, that is an answer in the sense that a lack of business activities in the state means a lack of physical presence. And just as in Quill, just as in Tyler Pipe, where sales were made from outside the state into the state, that was not sufficient to trigger tax obligations.
But Council, I think your friends at the state, to follow up, would say this is different, though, that there is a substantial nexus because of the data storage, for example, or because you paid, as I mentioned in the beginning, you paid third parties to be on college campuses to distribute advertising. So even if we look at Quill, even if we look at the other cases, isn't the way that we do business now, or your companies do business now, that presents a whole different question for the U.S. Supreme Court.
If those were the facts, that would present a different question. But
so
those are not the facts, Your Honor. And so the facts are, which we've cited amply in our brief, is that the client, in this case Newegg, never visited college campuses, never had the third party visit college campuses. All the distribution of promotional materials occurred in the same way as catalogs were distributed, by mailings from California into the state. In terms of storage, there is zero storage of data here. What is stored, and it's not stored, but there's something called cookies, which is not a storage. It's a bunch of digital zeros and ones, which is like a license plate, et cetera, that gets transmitted whenever a computer user who has a cookie on its computer reaches out to my client's website and says, here I am, and this is a like caller ID to identify.
So it recognizes me if I use the website.
Exactly. It's like a handshake to put the two.
I'm very familiar.
Okay. Mr. Eisenstein, we're talking about the commercial activity tax, the CAT, which took over from the corporate franchise and personal property tax for companies. Are you saying that your retail companies would not have been subject to those earlier taxes at all?
I think the commercial, yes, I think we're saying that, but I want to make sure I understand the question. So the earlier taxes, one of which was the income tax, so there is both a federal constitutional standard, but more importantly, a statute called Public Law 86272 that would preclude the imposition of state income taxes on the basis of even entering the state for mere solicitation. And we didn't do, none of my clients did anything close to that.
So what I'm trying to understand what you're saying Ohio is trying to do here. You're saying that Ohio, in putting the CAT tax on these retail companies, is going into or taking on companies that had no previous tax obligations to the state of Ohio.
That's
and
correct.
And it's this bright presence, what the term is, the bright line presence rule that the state is attempting to use to more or less broaden what would capture companies within the state.
That is correct, Your Honor. Our position is that a state doesn't have the power to say mere sales alone, which is what the state did under 5751.01(i)(3). I know it's a mouthful. What they did in that case is say you have more than $500,000 of taxable gross receipts, you have nexus. It can't do that.
Even though they're talking about a very small number, at least that's what we have been talking about in terms of CAT, that we're talking about broadening the pool and having the number be small for all of these companies.
I realize that, but if, as the Quill Court said, if Ohio does it, then other states could follow suit. So Ohio was the first state to say—
Many other states have a CAT tax.
The state of Washington has had a longstanding kind of CAT tax. The state of New Mexico and Tennessee recently adopted a gross receipts tax based only on a factor nexus or sales into the state.
Ohio. I mean, comparable to Ohio.
Comparable to Ohio, yes, Your Honor. And the state of Washington recently changed its statute to say that it's not activity in the state that triggers the requirement to pay the privilege tax, but it was the level of sales. And unlike Ohio, they used the nice even number of $267,000. So why is $267,000 the right number, and why is $500,000 the right number? That's not the issue. The issue is whether or not all states, and it's a burden not only to my clients, but it could be a burden to Ohio companies.
Well, how complicated would that be to pay a CAT tax in every state that you mail to and that you have a presence in and do business in excess of $500,000?
Well, it would be complicated in two senses. Number one, it's not only the states, but for example, the state of Washington has 40 municipalities that require the payment of the B&O tax. Their version of the CAT tax. San Francisco, Los Angeles, and many other states authorize their municipalities to adopt a CAT tax. So the question is will you open the floodgate to multiple taxes? And what the Quill Court said is that the Commerce Clause is concerned with multiple burdens of paying tax.
In Washington, you indicate that they changed it so it would now be almost exactly like the Ohio CAT tax, just a different number that they say is the threshold to get you in.
Correct.
But they allow localities to do it as well. So do they tax it twice, or do they just piggyback off of the state tax that's filed, much like state income taxes piggyback off the federal adjusted gross?
Yes, it's like that. There's a local rate and a state rate, so it's a dual rate.
So when you file, the locals just come in and look at what you filed with the state and say, for us, you got to pay X additional.
I have a practice that has extended to other states,
yeah.
And in this, I've handled audits by the City of Seattle, City of Tacoma. So each of the municipalities is a king in their own kingdom, and they have the opportunity to do audits. They have the opportunity to require separate returns, separate assessments. And so what would happen is the 6,000 in Quill could get multiplied to 19,000. So it's not just the 50 states of the union, but it could well be local jurisdictions. I forgot to, may I just say one thing? I forgot to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal. I sincerely apologize
for
that.
In your view, could Congress constitutionally pass a law that would allow for what the state of Ohio wants to do here?
Absolutely, Your Honor, and that's the remedy. If times have changed, if it's easier to do tax collection, if the e-commerce has become a giant in the same way that e-commerce mail order became a giant at the time of the Quill decision, it's up to Congress to change. It's not up to an individual state to try to blaze new trails as the state of Ohio.
Mr. Eisenstein, do your clients pay tax in any of the states that they do business in?
Certainly.
What taxes do they pay there?
They pay net income taxes, which
Pardon
is
me,
a,
please?
They do pay net income taxes and sales taxes and other property taxes.
In the respective states?
Absolutely, sir.
But no commercial activity tax?
None of the other states thus far, I think, where my clients do business, I think it's fair to, excuse me, the state of Tennessee has a commercial activity tax, and one of my clients has a facility in Tennessee, so yes, it does pay tax.
Because it has a presence there?
Correct.
And that's the nexus?
Correct.
Now,
you said that Congress could do this, but I thought your argument was that this was violative of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Correct.
Because it imposes a burden on that.
That's correct.
And why wouldn't the same burden be imposed then by some regulation from Congress imposing this tax?
So that's the beauty of our federal system. So what the framers of the Constitution said, as set forth in the Quill case and in many other cases, is that let Congress decide, and let Congress, which has an ability to weigh the benefits and the burdens. So Congress has weighed in on the Internet, for example, the Internet Tax Freedom Act, and says, hands off. Don't touch the Internet because we think it shouldn't be taxed. On other taxes, it is said, you know, we'll have a more nuanced standard. But that's a province of Congress. Congress can say, well, the amount should be $266,350 as opposed to $267,000 of sales. But that's up to Congress, and that's a proper legislative judgment. If it were a due process issue, Congress could not change that. But it's not a due process issue. It's a Commerce Clause issue.
And is it merely because you have no presence in Ohio that you claim you're exempt from this imposition of tax?
That is correct, Your Honor. And it's because the test under Tyler Pipe and the long line of U.S. Supreme Court cases say that there needs to be an activity performed by the company or on behalf of the company. And indeed, in the leading case called Complete Auto, which cited to the one of the first general cat tax type cases, cited to the General Motors case, which said one looks to the local incidents, the local activities, to determine whether there is sufficient
nexus.
And
no court has yet then addressed what Justice French was talking about with respect to the software or the volume of activity.
No court, well, the Tyler Pipe Court said that mere sale did not focus on sales into the state as creating nexus. And they said that the volume of sales was significant. The Quill Court in the sales tax context said that Sales doesn't matter. It's economic presence, which is the presence of customers in a state, doesn't matter. Courts have not.
That's for sales tax, right?
That's for sales tax.
But we're dealing with a different type of tax here. And let me ask you, the services or the goods you supply, the business that your clients conduct, are they in competition with businesses in Ohio that would be doing the same type of business?
I'm not sure. I'm not aware of them. One of the clients sells shoes, so I assume there's some shoe stores.
So it wasn't the theory of the tax, this CAT tax, when it was originated, to level the playing field for Ohio merchants across the, by elimination of the personal property tax and the, escapes me what the other tax was, but you know, the theory, as Justice Lansinger mentioned earlier, was we're going to have a more level playing field. We're going to have less tax per individual, but it will encompass, collect more individuals within that net that will pay taxes.
The problem with that approach is, as recognized in the Complete Auto case and other cases, is that it doesn't take into account the national market. So if every state had that approach, we could have the balkanization of the market that the Commerce Clause was designed to address. Certainly that approach is a fair and proper approach with regard to the Due Process Clause. But if those things need to be changed as a result of changing times and to be fair to the individual retailers in the state, other individual retailers in the state, that's up to Congress to change.
So you're really arguing the long game here more than the impact on the clients.
That's absolutely right. This is a question of the burdens on interstate commerce, and that is the long game.
Council, is there a bill pending currently in Congress?
There is, introduced by Representative Steve Chabot in the Ohio representative.
And what would the bill do?
The bill would set forth the nexus standards for commercial activity type taxes.
And would you be included under that bill?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I haven't analyzed it in detail. We may or may not be.
And the use of the software, the generation of the number of customers and the gross receipts collectively, in your judgment, do not provide a nexus?
That's
for
correct.
The imposition of tax?
Because it's not an activity conducted by or on behalf of the company within the state of Ohio.
But the customers are within Ohio.
That's absolutely true.
The software is within Ohio, is it not?
All of that is true, Your Honor, but there are two responses that I would have. One is that the software is intangible property. It's not tangible property, but the more important response is all of the software is used to facilitate communications, interstate communications between, on the one hand, the customer, and on the other hand, my clients, the retailers. None of the software is used within the state to conduct any business in the state. It's the same thing as the catalogs that were sent into the state. They're intellectual property assets, the copy and the pictures of the products. All those are subject to intellectual property. Those are assets in the same way as software. But all of those are used in interstate commerce. And the court in Quill didn't find that to be nexus, nor did any other court find that.
If you had a computer storage center in the state of Ohio, or a switching center, or the guts of the operation were actually in Ohio, and used to communicate with other customers in Ohio, that would be a different story.
That's absolutely right, okay. And that's what our contention is. Okay. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Fossey.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. If I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. I'd like to start by addressing this remarkable statement that I heard that these companies aren't doing business in Ohio. Over the audit period in this case, these companies realized hundreds of millions of dollars in gross receipt from Ohio side of sales.
Counsel, wasn't it that they didn't have a presence in Ohio, not that they weren't doing business in Ohio?
It's
a physical counsel, presence in Ohio.
Counsel, and I agree with Your Honor, that's the crux of their appeal. Counsel told us at the beginning of his argument that they don't do business in Ohio. And that's, to me, if you ask front runner down the street who sells shoes is Mason Company doing business in Ohio? They'll tell you they sure are.
I think we can get the distinction,
all right.
Council. What I was trying to focus on was the physical presence. And I think what the state says in your brief is there is a physical presence. It's with data storage. It's a third-party advertising where they have someone on the Ohio State campus. So those seem to me to be factual questions. Can you talk about that first? If we do have a physical presence, we're in a whole different ballgame in terms of what cases apply. So can you address that first?
Yes, Your Honor, I can. And before I start, I'll just note that they're trying to engraft the Quill standard for physical presence into an area of law where it doesn't belong. And I like to talk more about that, but let me directly answer your question first. So let's start with the data harvesting that several of you have asked about. What happens is Crutchfield or their partners monitor the activities of Ohioans on their computers. This is activity of an Ohioan done on their devices in their homes here in Ohio. And they use that information for not only for marketing purposes, but also for their own business purposes.
Why isn't there the company though? Where's the company's computer?
They may be, okay, that's a tough question because we had evidence in this case that in fact a couple of the companies had third-party contractors that were in Ohio that were delivering some or all of their website to their customers. Other third parties may be located throughout the United States. There may be people in California, there may be people in their home state, but the point is the activity that's produced is produced locally and it's harvested here locally from these users' computers.
And it's my laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why isn't that like a catalog, a mail order catalog?
The difference here is beyond measure. A catalog is a stack of paper that you receive in the mail. The online transaction that occurs in this case allows Crutchfield to not only utilize your information to remarket to you, so they may say—
They're watching me.
Yeah, they're watching you, and I'm sure some
of— That's why the ads show up on Facebook, so I get that they're watching me. But they're watching me from Virginia, right?
Not necessarily. And the way they're watching you is by what you're doing here locally. So when you, if you go, I'm going to go look at running shoes, I'm going to click on a page about running shoes, that data is data that you've produced that's stored on your computer that a third party is then tracking. So that third party, when you go back to check your email, you may get a banner ad on the side that says, hello, Justice French, here are some shoes you might be interested in.
Is that your position, that tracking is commercial activity conducted in the state of Ohio? Is that your argument?
That's a part of it, absolutely. In addition, when I visit their website as a user, my computer interacts with their servers in a way that I'm downloading information from them, instructions from the retailer on how their website should load. And my computer's performing that operation. That information that I receive from the seller is software, it's often proprietary, and it's stored locally on my computer to make that operation happen. And to make it faster, companies like Mason and Crutchfield in this case contracted with content distribution networks who were here in Ohio, in at least one case we showed that in order so that the website would load faster, so my purchases go faster. There's evidence that a long time to make a purchase makes a sale less likely. And because for business reasons, the cost of sending that information is cheaper when I do it locally instead of from abroad.
Counsel, may I make it a little more simple? I'm over on your right. Everyone seems to miss
me.
I'll have to get taller or something. As I understand the state of Ohio's position, though, we're no longer talking about bricks and mortar, are we? And it's interesting that we have the Mason Company here while we're having this discussion. But is it your position that the handshake that we heard talked about happens in some place called the cloud, and it is now a commercial transaction in Ohio without regard to where, for example, Justice French is being spied on in her computer and someone in Virginia is doing the spying? Is it your position? We don't care where the people are?
That's not only my position, that's the General Assembly's position in levying the commercial activity tax. The idea was that if you're doing business in Ohio, You can be asked to pay for your share of the tax burden in the state. And the U.S. Supreme Court has repeatedly upheld that proposition. This isn't an overreach by Ohio. This is bedrock fundamental law.
What's your strongest argument from a case standpoint that you rely on?
Okay. Well, their argument is founded on this idea of a physical presence in the state. And what they're trying to do is tell you that, hey, this line of Commerce Clause cases, you know, has the same standard as this line of sales tax cases.
Well, as I understand it, it's a substantial nexus that has to exist with a physical presence within the state. I understand what the case law says. What's your strongest case, and what analysis can you offer us?
Thanks for that. The standard is not that they have a physical presence in the state based on substantial activity. In fact, none of the Commerce Clause cases require a physical presence. In most of those cases, like Tyler Pipe, like GM, like Standard Press Steel, there were physically present salespeople or something of that nature in the forum states, but these cases were from the 60s and 70s. They didn't have the ability to do the sort of online marketing and the sort of analytics on customer data that's now done lightning fast and online. And every state court that's looked at this, has, and this court included, has said there isn't any physical presence requirement.
Well, counsel, you were talking about physical presence, though. You were saying that, you know, you're using a laptop here in Ohio, and that's the exchange of information, the retrieval, then the banner ads, et cetera. So if that's not relevant, which I hear you saying, because if you want to, you know, morph that into a physical presence, your only test, from what I hear you saying, is that there has to be substantial activity which has nothing to do with physical presence.
It may involve physical presence. Certainly, physical presence is something that could be considered.
We wouldn't be here if they didn't have a, you know, bricks and mortar. If they didn't have a physical presence, we wouldn't be here. So, my question to you: are you relying on the mechanism of a laptop and its interaction and banner ads and cookies and all this storage and the, you know, ebb and flow of information, or are you simply saying that the statute and therefore the legislature only focused on substantial activity, and that substantial activity is measured by a threshold of $500,000 or more?
Yeah, so there's sort of a layered approach here, and we went belt and suspenders. So we said you'll need physical presence, but if you do, we've got it aplenty here. So as we talked about, we discussed the content distribution networks. We haven't yet mentioned in-state affiliates, which Crutchfield and Mason used companies that reside in Ohio to provide links to their products, and they would receive, Newegg and Mason, and those companies would then receive commission on their sales. We talked about the company that hung posters and distributed brochures.
That's why I want to bring you back to where this discussion got started with Justice O'Donnell. He asked for your strongest case, where you've said belt and suspenders, and you keep telling us about the physical presence of things that are essentially involved in computer internet, but you said we don't need that. And he asked you for your strongest case on the we don't need that side of it. So we haven't heard that yet.
So we're quite comfortable with the Tyler Pipe standard. The U.S. Supreme Court has also, in the International Harvester case, said no physical presence is required for substantial nexus. In that case, corporate shareholders were earning dividends from an in-state business, and the state placed a tax on those dividends. And part of the challenge of those taxpayers was, we don't reside there, we're not in the state. And the Supreme Court said, you don't have to be.
We're not arguing about this issue in this case, but it seems to me that it comes down ultimately to the things that we have to consider, because we know the U.S. Supreme Court will consider those things. If these companies were headquartered and running all of their operations, the things that they do in other states, if they were here in Ohio, what would you collect the tax on? Would you collect the tax on the gross receipts of everything that they sold everywhere in the world?
No, Your Honor, and that's one of the elegances and the beauty of the commercial activity tax, revised code.
Hard for me to think of elegance in terms of taxes, but...
Some of us see things that way.
I guess geeks who make their living doing tax work think of it in terms of elegance when it's really well done, so go ahead.
We all have different filters for beauty, but so the revised code 5751033 talks about situs and gross receipts. And the only receipts that we're going to measure as a proxy for the tax are receipts situs to Ohio. So if you're an Ohio business and your receipts are situs elsewhere, you're making sales into Wisconsin, we don't touch those receipts.
So when we look at it nationally in the Commerce Clause in terms of fairness, if these companies were situated here, the sales in Virginia that they made would be left to Virginia.
That's right.
To tax in terms of a tax on the opportunity to do business.
Yes, absolutely. And in the same way, local retailers are taxed on only their gross receipts realized in Ohio.
But counsel, why wouldn't that violate then what the Supreme Court has said in drawing a distinction between the due process concerns and the Commerce Clause concerns? Why is this not a national problem that Congress should solve?
It's not a national problem because the Supreme Court has already said that states may ask for their fair share from companies doing business in the state. And that's what the CAT does. This isn't, as it's been presented, an overreach to grab out-of-staters. The commercial activity tax was a substantial overhaul of Ohio's tax system. And it was an effort to do away with all the flaws inherent in the corporate franchise tax and the heavy burden that the personal property tax placed on certain industries like manufacturing. It was an effort to be fair to everybody, and it said, you know, we're going to, across the board, we're going to measure how much tax you pay by your gross receipts.
But in terms of even using the word fairness, doesn't that go to due process? It doesn't go to the Commerce Clause that really looks at, but what's the burden on the national economy?
You're correct about the fairness piece being a due process challenge, and to some extent it goes to another prong of the complete auto test that's not before this court. But let me address your concerns about the burden on the national economy. You know, what Quill said and what the cases that discuss Commerce Clause jurisprudence say is that what you're concerned about is protectionist measures from the state. So measures that where the state says, we're going to treat our residents different, you know, tariffs, burdens on people who want to do business in the state that don't apply also to other people and that don't represent that business's fair share. So that's the concern of the U.S. Supreme Court's Commerce Clause jurisprudence. And if every state had a CAT tax, it'd be fine. We're citing the receipts from the business that you did in this state.
Would municipalities and other inferior jurisdictions also be able to impose this kind of a tax?
Yes, they're free to impose those.
So as Mr. Eisenstein suggests, there's 19,000 such entities that can impose this tax.
And that's okay. The Supreme Court has never said that gross
it's
receipts...
It's okay if you're not paying it, I guess.
Constitutionally, it's okay.
Okay.
The burden that we're talking about here is on interstate commerce. It's not on an individual retailer.
And that goes back to Justice French's question, though. If it's an interstate commerce, isn't it a matter for Congress to look at as opposed to individual states?
Interstate commerce is of course, under Congress's purview, but the states are sovereigns. The states are allowed to enact taxes that do not violate the U.S. Constitution, and the way this works is states are free to impose any tax they want.
So if I understand your argument, you want us to take a very careful look at Tyler Pipe and determine whether or not the crucial factor is establishing the nexus, whether the activities performed in the state are significantly associated with the ability to establish and maintain a market.
That is an excellent way of putting it. I was asked the question several times, and you've answered it better than I have. So the standard that we're looking for you to apply here is whether the company has engaged in substantial efforts to grow and develop their marketplace in the state. And that's out of Tyler Pipe, as you indicated. And states that have looked at this, let me give you an example. There's a line of credit financing cases. MBNA Capital One out of Massachusetts, MBNA out of West Virginia. In those cases, the highest courts of the state looked at these taxes and said, this isn't a sales tax, so we're not worried about physical presence. And the fact is, you made calls into the state and you sent mailers into the state that resulted in credit lending from which you earned income. That's enough for U.S. Commerce Clause purposes. Similarly, we have intangibles cases like Jeffrey out of South Carolina. By the way, the Capital One case, the U.S. Supreme Court denied cert on that. Jeffrey out of South Carolina, 1 year after Quill, the South Carolina court looked at an out-of-state corporation whose only business was leasing trademarks to an in-state business. So it was a Toys R Us franchisee would lease from this out-of-state company these trademarks. 1 year after Quill, the Supreme Court of South Carolina said, that's enough. U.S. Supreme Court didn't accept cert on that case.
Counsel, I'm having some problems now. I thought I understood your position when we last talked, but let me try again.
Sure.
You answered Justice Pfeiffer that if the physical presence was in Ohio and they're selling to the world and they're doing $100 million, or let's make it $100 billion, big successful business. My understanding is the CAT tax is a privilege tax,
yes,
not a sales tax.
That's correct.
So you're saying if there was a presence here and all the sales were outside of Ohio, there'd be no tax?
They would not be subject to CAT registration and reporting requirements if their sales were all sitest outside of
Ohio.
And
that's where I'm having a problem with the term privilege, that it's a privilege to do business,
right,
in the state of Ohio.
And there are other ways that the tax is levied. So we would look at, for instance, if you're domiciled in the state, then you would be considered to be somebody who should pay the tax. But the question then would be, do you have gross receipts by which we can measure the tax? And so you're domiciled in the state, sure, you should be registering and paying, but if all your gross receipts are elsewhere, then you're not gonna pay the tax on that amount.
Counsel, with respect to the congressional oversight of the Commerce Clause, is it your position, the state's position, that while there have been numerous discussions over the last few years about legislation in Congress, they haven't done it?
That's right.
So the field is open to the states as long as they don't do something that violates the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Commerce Clause. So that's essentially where we are legislatively. It's an open field.
Yes.
Subject to the constraints of the Commerce Clause as defined by the U.S. Supreme Court cases.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if this is not a tariff,
it's not.
Then the CAT's not a tariff, so it doesn't implicate the Commerce Clause.
It may implicate the Commerce Clause only to the extent that we have an out-of-state company saying, you know, there's some part of this complete auto standard that we don't meet, and that's what we're here about. But in terms of the burden on interstate commerce, no, there isn't a burden sufficient to say that the CAT tax burdens interstate commerce in that way. And with regard to the burden, you know, the thing the court looked at in Quill was the compliance burden, because for sales and use tax, the vendor is not the responsible person for the tax, it's the consumer. And so what the court said there was, we're basically deputizing you to collect tax and hold it in trust on behalf of the states, and we think that's an overreach. You know, that's a transactional, it's a sales tax, is a transaction by transaction tax. So I have to look at the status of the purchaser. Are they exempt? Are they putting it to an exempt use? Did they remit the sales tax? And if I'm wrong, I get in trouble for that. And it's transaction by transaction. So $1 of sales is 7 cents. Now, you compare that with the CAT, which is assessed quarterly, and it's just done by where did you sell the product, or where did the transaction take place? Where did the gross receipts become realized? So all I have to know is where that happened, and I report that quarterly. And the CAT is so low burden, if during this time period, if I didn't make $150,000 in gross receipts in the state, I didn't have to pay anything. If I made up to $1 million, I paid $150. Beyond $1 million, I paid $150 plus 0.26% on my gross receipts. That's 0.26 of a cent on each dollar. You contrast that with the burden of a 7-cent sales tax, and you can see the CAT has a much lower rate and is less burdensome. Additionally, Quill was worried about the administrative and record-keeping requirements of a sales tax. Again, the sales tax is transaction by transaction. That poses an enormous burden on the seller to keep records to show that this sale was either exempt or it was not exempt, it occurred in this place at this time.
What years did the tax commissioner assess in this case?
2005 through 2012. Some ended in 2011.
Okay, and what was the amount?
Not trying to dodge the question, only one of these was done as a result of audit. So Newegg, we actually looked at their gross receipts in Ohio and came up with a number. The sales were in excess of $269 million over a 4.5-year period. The resulting tax on that was around $700,000. And for the other companies, they were just estimated assessments. They weren't. They were just sort of placeholder assessments. When this case is back down in front of the tax commissioner to figure out actual liability, we'll have to do that.
In a sense, Ohio is looking at an analog age and moving into a digital age, and you're saying that Ohio has made the proper response to the problem.
Absolutely. Ohio's CAT tax is forward looking, and the funny thing is the cases that they're talking about that require physical presence. The Quill case in 1992, the internet had been around for exactly 1 year in 1992. There wasn't a browser available commercially until the next year. So
if we were to affirm this decision, this is the type of case that the U.S. Supreme Court would potentially be taking.
My guess, if I was a betting man, would be no. They've so far turned down virtually every state court case that's addressed the question of whether a state needs a physical presence for tax jurisdiction. There's been, I can think of four or five that have been petitioned on cert, and it's been turned down.
And the status today with respect to internet sales tax has not been collected?
No, not
anywhere.
Not in Ohio.
Anywhere in the U.S.?
What about Amazon? Didn't they just change their policy this year?
Amazon did, but that wasn't as the result of an action of the Department of Tax. That was just Amazon saying, look, we want to be good citizens in Ohio. We're going to start collecting and paying sales tax in Ohio.
But are some states levying the sales tax on internet sales, or is
so there is a
is that the big debate in Congress that hasn't moved is the sales tax rather than the CAT tax type thing?
So, some states are starting to make progress in that way, and this is a response to. At least some commentators have suggested there was a U.S. Supreme Court decision in 2015, Direct Market Association versus Broll, which was a sales tax case. Colorado had a reporting requirement. They said you don't have to collect the tax, but you have to tell us who your consumers are, so if we want to issue assessments, we can issue assessments. And in that case, Justice Kennedy penned a concurring opinion where he said, look, it's time to do away with Quill. It's hurting the states. It was bad law from the get-go. The court recognized in Quill that it was laid only on stare decisis. They were relying only on an earlier case, Bellis Hess, they had decided. And even in the Quill opinion, they said, if Bellis Hess came up today in 1992, we might have decided it differently. And so back to Quill. In that case, they said, we recognize that this is a sort of an artificial bright line rule we're creating. We're doing so on the basis of precedent. We're only doing it in the sales tax area. And it said, we recognize we haven't applied this same standard outside of the sales tax. And what case did it cite for that? Standard Press Steel. Tyler Pipe. So the Supreme Court is saying right there, gross receipts taxes, physical presence, we haven't recognized that standard in gross receipts taxes. So for the internet retailers in this case to say that, that Tyler Pipe says otherwise, it's belied by Quill itself.
I'm interested, so with respect to Quill, the state's position is stare decisis is sometimes not particularly valuable, right?
we don't need you to touch Quill. We don't need you to do anything with Quill. In fact, in Cusho, this court already looked at Quill and said it doesn't apply outside of sales tax. So all you have to do, you don't even have to talk about Quill, just cite Cusho and say the physical presence requirement doesn't exist outside of sales tax.
But if you look at the idea that for 500,000 in gross receipts kicks in the CAT tax, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How is this not, in a sense, a sales tax? I know you said it's not a sales tax, but I'm trying to get my head around that concept.
Yeah, and you know, this court has wrestled with that in the past in the Ohio Grocers case. This isn't a sales tax for a number of reasons. First of all, structurally, well, let me say this. It's different structurally, and it's different in its burden on interstate commerce. Structurally, as this court recognized in Ohio Grocers, the CAT is not a tax because it's levied on the privilege of doing business in the state.
But
measured
then again,
by
you get to the idea of the benefit or the physical presence, don't you? And you have talked about, or the CAT tax talks about the bright line presence rule. And I'm still having trouble distinguishing what you're saying here.
Sure. So gross receipts in Ohio are the measure of the privilege of doing business. So in other words, your privilege is taxed on how much business you've done in the
state. So the more successful you are, the more you've done business in Ohio. I mean, that's the privilege is connected to your success. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And that may not just be success in retail sales. Any income that you earn in the state, any receipts that are taxable as gross receipts, so it could be from services that you've rendered, it could be from certain gains on financial instruments, all of that stuff falls under the category of gross receipts, and it's just used as a measuring stick. So we're saying your franchise is going to be taxed based on sort of the total amount of gross revenue, of gross receipts, sorry, not revenue, gross receipts that you've generated in this state. And where you're doing 500,000 worth of business or more, the General Assembly legislatively made the decision that is a proxy for a substantial amount of business in the state. That's a proxy for all the bells and whistles that come along with substantial nexus in this state. If you're generating that kind of amount of gross receipts in the state, then you will have substantial nexus as the court recognized under in the Commerce Clause jurisprudence. And this was the testimony of one of the bill's drafters and one of its proponents as it moved through the General Assembly. He was also on the General Assembly's Committee on State Taxation when this bill was being considered. And his testimony was that $500,000 gross receipt threshold was a proxy for the type of activity that we would expect to demonstrate substantial nexus with the state. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if there's no further questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Counsel, you have 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I want to begin with Justice O'Donnell's question, which was, what is your leading case? And I've been waiting for a long time to hear it. So it was great to hear that Tyler Pipe is the leading case. We wholeheartedly agree. And if you read Tyler Pipe, it says there needs to be activity in the state conducted by the taxpayer or on behalf of the taxpayer.
The council doesn't Tyler Pipe say that it's sufficient, that a physical presence is sufficient, but not necessarily necessary?
Well, it doesn't. Yeah. So the Tyler Pipe Court said we can either look at sales or we can look at the activities that are occurring in the state. And in that case, they chose not to look at sales, and the sales were very significant, along the same magnitude as the sales by my clients in Ohio in this case. And yet the court said, no, The test is, look at what the activities are in the state. And that follows the General Motors case, which is again cited by cited by Complete Auto, which said you look to the local incidents to measure nexus for a privilege tax like the CAT. In addition, in the Quill case, what is instructive is how the court dealt with stare decisis. And stare decisis, I think, is a very important point here. There is a line of cases. It's called Tyler Pipe. It's not based on sales or proxy of activities in the state. That's not the test. The test is activities within the state. And in fact, in the Norton case, an old case in 1951, mere sales alone were not sufficient. There needed to be some physical presence, and something as substantial as in the Tyler Pipe case, where there were local solicitors calling on customers on a daily basis, soliciting orders, et cetera. That there's nothing close to that. And the stare decisis is particularly important here because this is an area where Congress can change. And as Justice Scalia said in his concurring opinion in Quill, that's what makes it all the more important that the court defer to the line of cases and not blaze new trails, as my brother is asking you to do, is to create a new standard that economic presence, having customers in a state, having sales in a state creates nexus, or better yet, doing business on the internet, whenever you open a web page and have a website, you have nexus. How is the customer?
You're saying that that's not activities in the state. If I'm sitting here and I buy a product on my laptop from one of your, and you mail it to me at my home address, that is not an activity in the state.
Conducted by or on behalf of the third party. That's the standard, Your Honor. It's not. Customers don't create and don't do work for the company. Customers buy products from the company. Just merely having customers in the state.
Supplying a product is not activity in the state.
Supplying a product by interstate commerce is not an activity in the state. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
There's no agent or representative providing the product.
You're done.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
I don't know how else to say it. Counsel, you've saved about a minute.
Okay. In conclusion, you know, the challengers on a constitutional challenge bear a heavy burden of showing that the statute is unconstitutional in all aspects. They can't do that here. And to overturn this statute would be to defeat the General Assembly's intent in enacting the statute. And must be done, if it's to be done at all, beyond a reasonable doubt. We'd ask you to affirm the Board of Tax Appeals, find that Ohio's commercial activity tax substantial nexus statute is constitutional. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.